This is Let's Keep It Real with Sandy Joy Weston, your weekly dose of positivity with awesome stories and guests from all over the world. It's an opportunity to learn some great new things and expand your mind. We'll tackle topics from all areas of life, and as always with Sandy, the sky's the limit.
Oh my goodness, my Let's Keep It Real people. I just have to be really real with you. I tried this before with Kat Miller, who's in the house. Hi, Kat. How are you?
Hi, I'm in the house still.
And all of a sudden I was like, wait, pause. Something's exploding. And I'm like, something's going crazy. And it was my washing machine going, mayday, mayday. And I just was like, ah, you know, that's life. We'll have to deal with that later. Hopefully there won't be a flood down there, Kat.
Yeah, I hope not too. I'll let you know if I see water coming up from behind.
No, it's good. It's all good. So before I get into your bio, I think you live in Mexico, don't you?
I do. I do live in Mexico. I've lived here for years. I feel really blessed, really lucky.
So when you say years, how many years?
15.
Okay. So the funny thing, peeps, that you have to understand is I have another friend, Kat, who moved to Mexico from California. And I think she's only been there maybe 2 or 3 years, maybe something like that. And then I get a notice from Kat Miller from another friend. And I didn't look at the last name. And I'm like, wait a minute. Two cats in Mexico. TEDx.
Yeah.
Wackadoo.
I know. Sharing the same stage. Yeah. At the same time. I know. That's, you know, what is it? 10 degrees of separation or. Yeah.
Oh, boy. I mean, like, wait a minute. Cat TEDx, Mexico. Okay. But she's only been there a few. All right. We could keep going, but. Maybe you should tell them a little bit more about you. Wait, where did you come? You said you're in Mexico for 15 years. Where were you before that?
California.
Oh, same thing.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, where in California?
Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, Mill Valley.
Okay, I have to ask. And then I promise I'm going to read about you. Why'd you move?
I had been sick. I had gotten sick. And in that process, I kind of lost my whole life that I could do because I couldn't do anything. And then as I was getting better and I was able to start a life again, I had a bizarre thought about moving to Mexico. And I was youngish. You know, I still needed to work and create money and all those things. But I just, it was such an out of the blue thought. I thought to pursue it. Like, what? I'm moving to Mexico? What? Huh? Huh? And everything just lined up. And within 4 months, I was living here full time.
Did you know anyone?
I knew my older sister's, one of her friends, lived here. That's it.
Wow. That's freaking awesome.
Yeah, it was kind of like diving through an open window that was going to shut, right? Because regular life was going to pick up again.
Right.
No, I would get back into my counseling practice. You know, I even had a place picked out because I was living with some friends at the end because I needed that level of support. And so it was all just, it was a moment to dive through that window. Otherwise I would have, I loved my life before. So I was planning on loving it again.
So how much do you come back and visit?
I don't come back all that often. Maybe once or twice a year. Yeah. Not very often. I'm very happy here. I have great friends there. You know, it isn't like, I didn't leave the United States or I didn't leave California. Or I didn't leave my people or anything. I moved towards something.
I love that. That's a whole nother podcast and I want to have so many questions for you, but I'm going to read your bio now and we're going to get into the topic because I have a lot of questions for you. Ready?
Hey.
Well, Kat, you're a TEDx and event speaker, counselor, and self-described aging enthusiast and wonderment catalyst. Love that. Never heard that ever in a bio. Love it. Kat's the founder of Age Freely and co-creator of the conversational card game Older. Got a lot of questions about that one. And Renewable Life. Kat helps people and culture break free from ageist narratives and shows how impermanence. I always don't like saying that word, impermanence. I got it right.
Okay. It's a hard one.
I don't know. It's just my lips. Impermanence, along with the dynamic interplay of decline and expansion in aging, can open the door to the relationship with ourselves we always long for. Okay, so let's just dive right into the biggest question. You said you were a counselor, but was this always your area of expertise, or when did it switch into it?
No, it wasn't always my area of expertise. I was kind of moving along as I aged with different groups in a way. So I was working kind of midlife, women midlife transitions and things. But what was the switch was I started to hear myself and my friends, bright, you know, competent, interesting people, say crappy things about aging. And I was laughing along with them. But something felt really off for me. My mother aged, you know, wildly, actually. And she and her girlfriends had a good time until obviously they all died. I guess not obviously, but they're all dead. My mother was much older. She had me when she was 41. So they all died of illness or whatever took them out. But they lived wild lives. And so I had that at the back of my mind, like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. You know, that aging sucks or it beats the alternative. You know, that's a very famous, that people say that all the time. Well, beats the alternative. I think I heard it yesterday, as a matter of fact. So then I watched Ashton Applewhite's TED Talk called Let's End Ageism. And then that was that. I just, my whole life changed. It was kind of like, you know, from the Matrix movie. It was like the taking the red pill. I was just like, kaboom. I could just see the lies. You know, it took me a while. It still takes me to unravel ageism. Yeah, it was just.
And how, that when was that? When was that? What year was that?
About 6-7 years ago. And I just started studying it. I wasn't doing anything with it in particular. Just started reading, watching, learning, reading studies, research articles, you know, and just seeing, wait a minute, this is bullshit. This is manufactured, you know, like all of the isms are manufactured.
Yeah.
What makes ageism particularly is different than the other isms is that the actual people in it believe the stereotypes. Now, the actual people in the other isms don't. They may be at the effect of them. They live at the effect of them, but they don't actually believe they're less than. Women don't actually think they're less than men. They may live at the effect of how society might see women as less or blacks or ageism or all that, you know, but the actual people in it with ageism, the actual people believe them, believe the stereotypes and prejudices. That's very unique.
Okay. Back up a second, because I want to make sure I got this and they got it. 6-7 years ago, you watched a TED Talk, and say who it was again.
Ashton Applewhite.
Love that name.
Wild name. Yeah, Let's End Ageism. I would encourage, she's funny. She's, and this is old, you know, an older talk, but I would say it's still at the top of the game. It really opens up what, how ageism is made up.
So I must have gotten, I don't even know, pages and pages, because I said, okay, what questions you want to ask? And there were lots, but the one thing, and I get it from my generation, they're mostly going through dealing with older parents and how to make this shift.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to pick one for you and we'll make up a name because it kind of has the sentiment of most, I'm sorry, I'm laughing because she's like, okay, Kat, never mind, Sandy, dear Kat, maybe she can talk to my mother-in-law that I love so much. Hmm. She is 91.
Uh-huh.
She is a whippersnapper.
Mm-hmm.
Worked into her 80s, able to do everything, and then all of a sudden can't get around. But here's the deal. She shuffles off to Buffalo. I like that. Won't use a cane, won't use a walker, won't leave her house, probably falls, won't tell us, and won't move. How can I even slightly change that mindset? I get wanting to, oh, and by the way, she drives. I get wanting to be independent and be in control, but please, oh, please help.
Well, that makes me think of a number of things. One is that hopefully this is the last generation that believes that being dependent or needing help is wrong and that they lose something of themselves. Because the truth is, we've never been independent. We've always relied on people or situations. Somebody was always there throughout our life, you know. So this idea of needing to be independent as a identity, as who I am, I think the next generations will realize we're interconnected. We need each other. It's okay to need help.
Yep.
The other answer, of course, to that is, one is she's been, what a fortunate life that she's been able to be a whippersnapper or whatever you want to call it, free and independent, that she's liked until recent. And the truth is, she gets to live and die the way she wants. Now,
so true. You're right. You're right.
So if she's willing to fall and crack her head and nobody finds her for 24 hours and she's dead, and she was
behind the rose bushes somewhere,
right, and she was alive for 10 of that and suffering, if she's willing to have that happen. Now, elder abuse gets in there because, you know, maybe she needs help. So it's a complicated issue.
Yeah.
But usually, in my experience, people won't change. The one way that I know of that can work is, instead of saying, you need, what's your, oh, it's a fake name anyway.
Sally Bell. You can call her Sally Bell. She'll never
say that. You know, saying to her, you need to let us help you. You need to stop driving. You need to, you know, you're too old. You're having a hard time. You're falling. Instead of doing the you need to, it's like, you know, I need this. Could you help me? I find myself so scared or so worried about you. It would make such a difference to me if you would use your walker. It would just make my life feel better and easier, or whatever the adjectives, right?
Yeah.
Bring it back over. Or to say, you know, this is her mother-in-law, right? This is not her mother-in-law. You know, we've been with each other for a long time. Do you trust me? Is there, you know, do you believe, like, you know, I wouldn't pull any crap on you. You know, when I say, you know, it would just make our lives so much better if you would. And sometimes that works because it's shifting the trust. That's what I did with my mother. She had Alzheimer's. And then at some point when we were making some decisions, I said, do you trust me? Do you believe that I'm not just making crap up and I'm just whining, or, you know, do you trust me? And she said, yes, I do. And then I said, this is what I see is needed. And I wouldn't want to take anything away from you ever.
Oh, I like that. So yeah. That's advice for this other woman. It is her mother, but it's the same thing. Do you trust me?
Mm-hmm. And of course, the person can say, no, I don't. No, I don't at all. No, I don't trust you. I think you just want to control me. You just want to take over my life. You don't think I can lead my life anymore, right? Those are the things that people say. And so there is a point of like, okay, she may fall through a death, you know, fall and die because nobody was around. There was no help in the house. It was something that if somebody was there, they could have picked her up and put her in an ambulance. And it's making some peace with people get to live their life the way they want and the repercussions of that. We're all experiencing, whatever age you are, the repercussions of the choices we make.
Yeah, because if somebody would die, let's just say, hypothetically, they would live a year less because they're living in the same home they grew up in, but they love taking care of their gardens, but they would be sad going to a senior home, then let them stay in their home. You know, that's what they want.
And it's tricky. It's tricky for sure.
And it brings them more joy in the here and now. And it's hard because when it's your parent, you're trying to, I guess, hold on to as many years as you can. But if they would be miserable here, let them play in the garden.
Yeah, it's tricky. You know, it is. It's like it for the child or the character, you know, whoever it is, the cousin, the aunt, one is, it's hard because to let go of that kind of, I know they'd be better off if they use their walker, to actually go, okay, but they don't want to. They're willing to crack their head. But also in having an honest conversation with somebody that says, I don't want to do any of that, is say, okay, so let me check this out. Are you good that if you fell and cracked your head and nobody was around and you stayed alive for like 6 or 7 hours, pretty much in pain, maybe even cold, you're on the floor. Are you good with that as one of the possibilities in the way you die? So part of it's also getting real. You talk about, you know, this is your topic. Getting real is also like, and so they either say, oh, no, that's not going to happen. Well, then that's just a regular old denial thing because it might or might not happen. But they also might go, oh, my God, no, I don't want to be on the floor alone by myself.
That is great advice, Kat. Great advice. All right. We're switching gears, baby.
Okay.
Young lady. She's 17. She says she has an older sister. Her older sister is 25 and already doing Botox and filler. She says, oh my goodness, Sandy, I don't know what you and Kat are thinking, but we're in a culture-obsessed environment. You can't turn around with not being concerned of looking younger. Okay. Yeah. And my sister is 25 and concerned about it. What is one way that I can break the narrative so I don't end up like that? I want to start right now. I'm only 17, but I feel like it's, oh my goodness, it's doom and gloom at 25. It can't be. I love this girl.
Betty. Yeah, I do too. So, you know, one of the things, like I share on my TED, is that the group most afraid of aging is women 20 to 29. And that's fascinating. Because I don't know how
fascinating.
I don't know how old you are. I'm 69.
I'm 65.
When I was between 20 and 29 aging, it was like kind of a no big deal. I mean, there were some markers. Oh, when I'm 30, I'm over the hill, or I don't know, some stuff, but not afraid of aging. So this young gal is pointing out the metrics. This is the metrics. So she's already doing the first step, which is going, something about this looks really, really screwy. This looks off to me. So the other suggestion is start to look for older role models. So we know a lot of the famous older women are speaking out about aging and how much they love it, what it means to them, how they're experiencing their bodies, how they're experiencing their life, how they feel about themselves. So to find the older role models, for sure. And even to find the role models who are in their 30s, who are just going, I ain't doing it. I'm not going to do it. So ageism is created by the pharmaceutical and beauty industry, right? So it's the billions of dollars that are spent each year on cosmetics, medical supplements, everything to reverse aging, which I find hysterical. Like, oh gosh, will I actually be 58 someday instead of 69? You know, like, you can't reverse aging. Why would you want to? Why you want to is because we have a beauty standard, because this is all about a beauty standard. I mean, the only permissible way to age is to be able to do everything you used to be able to do and look good doing it. Well, that's, you know, crap. I mean, that's not like, why is that the standard, you know? So yeah, to her, she's already ahead of the game. She sees something's wrong with it. Look for older role models of all ages, just older, any age older than her, for those people that are just wanting to live their life naturally.
Isn't that wackadoo, though? She's thinking about that at 17.
Well, I'm glad she is, because she's seeing it, and that's great. No, she shouldn't be concerned about it at all. Doing Botox at 25, isn't there better stuff to do with one's life? Like really, really fun stuff, not even just like, you know, I don't know, do well in school, but like great.
Be an end.
Yeah, like do great fun stuff.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So you talk about the interplay between decline and expansion.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal story that you can tell us of when aging like surprised you with like an unexpected, like you were joyful or it brought you growth?
Oh God, really in so many areas. Well, one is, one that, going back almost to this, what this last questioner asked, is I actually like my body and my looks better than I ever have. And that's a huge surprise, because I never really liked my looks when I was young. I always had a complaint about them. I never liked my neck. I don't have a neck. I don't have a chin line. You know, I've got 15 pounds too much. I mean, I had a criticism, you know, about my looks. So it wasn't that I didn't look whatever. I looked fine. I was fine, good enough, but I didn't know it. I think part of getting older is really realizing, hey, I look good. I like my looks. You know, the arm wings thing, you know, that's where, like in my TED, that's the audience just breaks into, you know, because I'm wiggling my, you know, my arm wings. And, you know, there's some relaxation. Getting older, there's a relaxation about identity and having to be a certain way and being perfect and looking a certain way and having other people see us. So that is a great boon with aging. So for sure, that's been true for me. I like my looks better than ever. I mean, what the hell? That's beautiful. I don't, you know, not that anybody else would agree or disagree. Whatever they do, I don't care.
But how matter?
But how I see myself. So that's one.
That's huge.
It is. It is. It is. Particularly
at any age. I'm trying to think, because, you know, I owned and operated health clubs. And my biggest thing was getting people to like where they are now. Like, okay, I get you want to do this and that and that. But to me, that was just icing on the cake. The most important thing is I wanted them to love and appreciate their bodies the way they were. And you're right. Guess what? The ones that disliked themselves the most were the ones that had the most awesome rocking bodies.
I know. I know. So it isn't really about that. I think as we get older, we just like ourselves more. We give ourselves more grace, more leeway, more, you know, I mean, there's science behind that. You know, the brain changing and things. So yeah, being able to like who we are now, the more we get out of making it matters what everybody else thinks, the more it matters more what we think and feel, then that all changes. You start to go, wow, look, I'm pretty.
I'm beautiful, damn it.
I'm beautiful, damn it. You know, and we almost, it's hard to use those words because they really have a very particular meaning culture by culture. You know, if you're in Polynesia, you need to be a big woman. If you're not a big woman, you just aren't pretty. You need to, you know, so it is a cultural thing. It's not like there's a standard of beauty, but there is a standard of beauty in the U.S. and Canada and, you know, certain other places. And that standard of beauty, what I just read recently, is a 15-year-old girl.
All right.
Okay. ending that on a happy note.
I have to tell you, and I'm sitting here thinking, I don't know if I should say this out loud, but I'm just going to say it. I'm very fortunate. I, even overweight, not overweight, whatever, I always liked the way I looked. Very rarely wore makeup. And people say, oh, if you wore a load of makeup, you'd be really, you know, the bomb. I'm like, I'm good. And I remember walking around my gym one time. I swear to God, Kat, this is true. One of my third gym in the city, and we ran short on towels, right? And so I was running from my locker room, and in the women's locker room, keep this in mind, to go get a towel, but I was nude, right? And the women came over to me and said, listen, Sandy, we know you have a great body, but we'd prefer if you covered it up. And
makes the rest of us feel bad.
I said, what are you talking about? I wish you all dropped your towels. Who cares? You know what I mean? But whatever. That was a fun. And then I realized, I'm like, you guys don't like your body? You guys are amazing. And so my whole mission became more about really, you don't like anything? Maybe you like your earlobes. Let's start there. What do you love about yourself, you know, and who you are? So, and I do think you're right. It's a mindset, because it wasn't like I was the prettiest girl. It wasn't any of that, but I felt like I was.
Yeah.
I was happy with myself the way I was, whatever.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I see in my friends, and we talk about it, and, you know, they know what's going to happen being around me and aging, but a lot of them will just not wear short sleeves at all anymore. They're not going to wear short sleeves.
Oh.
They're just like, I'm not showing my arms. this is ugly. This is ugly. And I'm like, inherently ugly? Yes, inherently ugly. I'm like, inherently. Now that's crazy. They can't be inherently. So I'm like, we live here in Mexico. We're about 78, 85 degrees year round. And you're never going to wear short sleeves again. And you may live for another 20 or 30 years. I mean, it's just ludicrous. So some women around, you know, including people on my, you know, social media and stuff, they're going, no, I'm wearing shorts. I'm wearing no sleeves. Screw this. This is really like, I'm going to be hot. I'm going to wear long sleeves all summer long because my arms and older people's arms are inherently ugly.
Oh, no, I've seen those. Wait, I saw, they're like little crepe, you know, thing, like thin things that you could wear that you don't see your arms. You know what I'm talking about? They're like,
yeah,
pants.
Yeah.
That, yeah. That's why they were wearing them. I thought they were really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And which could be cool unless you're wearing them because your arms are ugly.
All right. We got to get to this. I know we have so many questions, but I'm going to make sure I get this in because scary. I heard it like this one woman wrote it like 50 times. She must have just keep pushing it. Impermanence. It's a scary topic. What do you mean it's a gift and not a loss? So and I know you talk about why is making friends with impermanence important? And they don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it scares the hell out of us. We've been told that it's, you know, it's like, ah!
Yeah.
But actually, impermanence is obviously the design of life. It's not subjective. You can't say, well, I'm not doing impermanence. Thank you very much. It's not my choice. I'm not doing impermanence. Life has been impermanent. Life is always impermanent. It's always been impermanent. And all the changes that have happened since we were in utero and all the way through has been, we've been changing. Some of it's been great. Some of it has been awful. It's the nature of life. So what happens when we were younger, we kind of liked impermanence. Oh, I got pubic hair. Oh, look, I've got breasts. Oh, you know, my voice is dropped as a boy. Like we look, I get to drive. I get to leave my folks' house. I get to get married and have children, right? We've been looking forward like, yay, impermanence was great, right? Because you left what was ever behind. And it was a very cool thing. So once you start to get in the aging world where it's a bummer, then impermanence is like, it's screwing me over. Impermanence is ruining my life because I can't hang on to anything. You never could, and we never will. So in resistance to it, fighting impermanence, which there's no way to win impermanence. You can't battle it. It's like gravity. It exists. It's not optional. If you fight it, then you're unhappy, right? It's winning and you're trying so hard to stop it. If you make friends with it, you start to surf. It's like getting on a great wave. It's like, wow, things are leaving and going away. Things that I love and things that I don't love, they're both going away. And new things are coming that I love and new things are coming that I don't love. But if I surf it, then I'm with it. I'm not fighting. I'm not fighting the wave. I'm not fighting what's happening. I may grieve some losses for sure.
Absolutely.
Grief is a huge part of life, and it certainly is a part of aging. There's no doubt about that. So making friends with impermanence, what I found was I actually fell in love with it. I mean, I went like, you know, crazy about it, like felt the feelings of feeling in love, you know, like heart beating, and because I could see the design of life, like that is the design, and I can actually move with it.
Mm.
It's not trying to screw me over. Impermanence is not trying to ruin my life. It's actually ushering me into each new thing that eventually will be death.
Yeah.
But it's bringing my life, it's always in a forward motion, even though I lose things that I love. So I know, you know, when I was starting to write about it and talk about it, when I say it to people, impermanence, they glaze over. They like, oh, they don't, you know, what's interesting? Yeah, we know life is impermanent. We know that. So what? Okay, we have to talk about it. We don't have to talk about it, but we don't have to resist it. It's going to win. And it's beautiful. I mean, really, if you look at the arc of life, you look at a tree, a seedling, and comes up and blooms and lives its life, and then it fades and fades and goes down and loses its leaves and its branches. There's nothing wrong with that, but we have it as we age. That's wrong. It's bad.
You see, that's why my belief system works for me. I believe in a circle of life, so never ending. There is no death. Just come in, come out. And then I talk to God, who I call Neil, and say, okay, next time I want to come back is this. So for me, it doesn't have that end. You know, it's just cycle of life.
Yeah.
In, out. But that's my belief. And I get everyone has a different belief.
Right. And we're and you're doing in and out all the time anyway already. I mean, we're already doing in and out.
So even with having a different mindset of being an age enthusiast, it's still, and you embrace who you are and how you look, but what about when you can't physically, let's get back to the first question. When you physically aren't able to go out and take a run, do you know what I mean? Or play in the garden. Like your mind, for example, I have two really close friends. Oh my God, I love them. And they're 87 and 89 and married for, I don't know, 60 some years. And their mind is still there. I mean, they're brilliant. But physically, and I go to visit them, I try to visit them like at least once a week. It's really tough that they can't drive. You know what I mean? That they're in walkers, that they could fall over, and they know it's really frustrating. I would love help because I don't know the right things to say or not say sometimes. And I can see in both of them, they've done so many wonderful things. They've lived great lives. They're very grateful. They give back. They have a million grandchildren. They don't complain. Like, they're not those people. But still in all, it has to be extremely tough that you're not able to drive unless one of your kids are driving you and you literally have trouble getting up to go to the bathroom and your faculties are there.
Yeah. Yeah, that is rough. It's definitely rough, as you say. You said extremely, could be extremely, or it could just be rough. So the studies show that as decline in physical abilities is particularly tough if that was your kind of claim to fame. But what you're talking about is simple, gardening, driving, you know, not like you climbed Mount Everest and now you can't. Or you can't play tennis anymore, you're playing pickleball. You know, you're so if you hang on, if you go, well, I used to be able to do, I could always do and it's part of your identity. I'm a golfer. I never take the card. I'm the kind of guy who walks the nine holes or the, if you hold the identity, if you think that that's who you are, you suffer. If you go, that's right, that's what I used to do. I used to love it. I loved that I could walk all nine holes. I loved, you know, driving the car. I loved doing my roses. I loved all that. And you go, okay. And I'm sad to give that up. I'm sad to give that up. I wish I could still do that. And what is available for me now? What is available for me now?
So this is going to be, you just hit my Achilles heel. You're talking to me. I was good with all the other stuff, but I'm late. I got big bruises on me because I tried to jump. Probably I should have done. But I'm a mountain biker. I'm a hiker.
Okay. So you want
to get to go down easily, girlfriend?
Well, one is, who do you really want to be? What's really, really important to you? That there's kind of no second, third on the list.
I think for me, the most important thing is besides who I am as a human, I love being outside. So I could make the shift in what I enjoy. What can I still enjoy doing outside versus, you know, jumping cliffs? I have no business jumping anymore.
Right, right. That's right. Well, you know, you'll figure that out. A few more bruises or whatever. Right. So that's what you just did. You just you did it in adaptive.
Yeah.
And if one of the key pieces of being able to do all the stuff you used to be was being outside, then that's a great adaption.
Yeah.
But probably even more than that, probably what you want to be is to be happy, to be content.
Oh, I see.
Be at peace with yourself.
Yeah.
So if we put, if you keep your eye on the ball of what you really, really, really want, that helps as we lose identities as the golfer, as the person that can, I don't know, whatever.
I want to show up with pure joy and spread joy. And I can do that in many, many ways. That's the most important thing.
The other part of that is when one has to, one gives up something. So the studies show that, and this is science, the studies show that as people slow down physically, they find themselves with more presence and actually happier, right? We know that the oldest people on the planet are the happiest people, the youngest and the oldest. That's that study's, you know, everybody talking about aging uses that study. Statistically, when you get to 60, you start to really roll happiness up. The 40s and 50s are the unhappiest.
I'm in the sweet spot.
You're in the sweet spot. And it rises up. It's called the U-curve of happiness. It rises up and starts to level out at about 75, 78. It doesn't go down. It levels up. So I love using science to start to debunk belief systems that we have. So like even in my card game, there's one of the five cards is a science card to help people go, well, wait a minute, I believed it was like this. What do you mean the truth is it's like this? So really this experience is people slow down and be more present in their life, really paying attention to how they spend their time and energy, where they put their focus. Like when you're 25, you can kind of do everything if you have your health. You can kind of do it and you have your mental health. You can kind of do anything. You got energy. You can go to bed at 4 a.m, get up at 6, have a hangover, go to work. You got all that. You can't at our age for the most part. And as that happens, you get really picky. You only now do the stuff you really love, what's really important, what's meaningful. So that's part of why the physical decline, the slowness, the inability to do everything you used to be able to do brings people so much peace. So it's completely counterintuitive, right? Because it all looks like loss and it's horrible and oh my God.
Okay.
So the two women that you love who you're using as an example, their minds are great. They're grateful people and they're struggling with mobility.
Yeah.
And so they want to use their minds to check out all the social services and all the things that are available and the newest equipment if they have a little bit of bucks that can help with some of that.
Yeah.
You know, that they don't have to wait for a relative to drive them or their neighbor, that there's actually organizations all over the United States where people drive for free. You know, there's all kinds of resources out there. So part of it as we age, just like when we were young, we always had to resource up. You know, you get a new job, you got to figure it out, or you get a new apartment, where are you going to live and how's that going to work? Yep. Grocery store. So resourcing up is not new. So you got to resource up. Okay, I've got mobility issues. What do I need to learn? Get a gerontologist or a social worker who deals with aging. They'll look at your house. They'll start to make suggestions. They'll maybe move that chair over there so you can do that easier or get a grip here. So it's adapted. It's adapting. And one is trusting your resilience, because if you're 87 and 89, you are resilient. It's off the table. It's not a question. Younger people don't know they're resilient. Older people know. We've lived through so much crap and divorces and loss and job loss and money loss and friendship loss. And we made it. And we made it through those times where we said, I don't know if I can do this. I don't think I can make it. I can't make it. Now, if you're over 60, you say that. It's like, I get that it feels that way. But look, honey, you've already gone through, you know, let's go through the crap you've gone through in your life. You are resilient. That's one of the beauties of aging, is actually owning resilience. It takes a whole bunch of stuff off the plate, all kinds of worries off the plate. Yeah, it's going to suck if your partner or your husband, your wife dies before you and you've been together for 42 years. Most likely you'll make it. It's unimaginable. It's unwanted. I mean, you couldn't stand your partner and you can't wait till they die. But otherwise, you know, I could never make that. The truth is you can. You will.
So, and what you're making me think of is also the things physically that they're not able to do, finding another activity that they can do to replace it, because they're both mentally sharp as anything.
Yeah.
To get their mind off all the doctor's appointments and whatever, something that they enjoy, and they definitely are able to do anything that involves reading. And there's so much out there, you know, and iPads and books and maybe groups. I don't know. A book group. Are there senior book groups? I don't know.
Online, of course. And they're also in their neighborhood somewhere. And somebody will pick them up and take them there. And there's senior centers and there's all kinds of things. But there's regular book groups. If their mind's agile and they like to read, and you know, they can do a nonfiction book club. They can do a fiction book club. They can do write their own memoirs. There's all kinds of stuff. There is everything to do. This is the time of great plenty. And, you know, we're told as we age that curiosity is for young people. That is hella bull. Curiosity is with us from the time we're looking at, like, why is this leaf green? All the way through to the end, we have complete permission. It changes over time what we're curious about. But if you're 60 and you go, well, you know, it's really too late and I can't start that, or I'll never be good. I can't start playing the piano now. I'll never be good. That's the freedom. That's right. You never will be good. You don't have to worry about that. You can play the piano for fun. You could have great joy. Because when we're younger, I quit things if I didn't think I could be good at them. I'm not doing that. I'm never going to be good. I'm not. That's when you're older, you get to start new things. Yeah, you're never going to be an expert. What a relief.
Oh, Kat, this has been so freaking awesome. But can you pull a card, like, or pretend you're pulling a card? You talked about, do you have your cards with you?
I have them across the room.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I think it'd be really neat. Because you talked about your card game, like what would happen? What would we see if you just pulled a card?
Well, for one, here it is. Am I holding it upside down?
Doesn't matter.
Okay, here it is.
For those of you who can't see it, it's a beautiful box and it says 175 ways to play the game of inner aging. I love that.
So what it is it has five types of categories of cards, but let's just pick. What have you learned about apologizing that you didn't know when you were younger?
Oh, I get it now. I see. So it's more or less stimulating you, like, to think about that. What have you learned about apologizing that you didn't know when you were younger? Well, I can answer that one.
Okay.
I don't just say I'm sorry to say I'm sorry. You know how you, when I was young.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I remember when I was younger, I'd be like, yeah, I'm sorry, just to get out of trouble. Like, you know, you're younger, you're just like, whatever.
Yeah. Now,
I only say it if I'm really sincere and I really mean it. So that's a difference.
Yeah. So wisdom, there's tons and tons of definitions of what wisdom is, right? And wisdom is more likely when you're older, but lots of people are wise of all ages. But what the ingredient is in anybody's definition, if you look up, which is sort of, you know, fun for me, not for maybe you all, but is wisdom is where you look back on your life and you metabolize it, right? You're metabolizing your experience. So you're seeing the difference. You're seeing, gosh, you know, how I saw my mom and dad when I was young and how I see it now. Oh, now that I've had all this experience in between, maybe I have more compassion for where they're at. Maybe I've even repeated some of that. So some of the questions in the game are reflection questions. And I don't, you know, nobody knows that they were put there to help bring wisdom forward, but that's one of the ingredients. So there's a bunch of them that will have you look backwards and forwards.
Gotcha.
Or they'll just like, what kinds of things bring you the most pleasure now? How has that changed over time? So this is the same type of card.
Yeah. I like that though.
And then what are you no longer willing to tolerate in your life? What are you doing about it?
Again, it makes you think about it.
Yeah. So what's been happening with the game is that we tested it, you know, on beta tested it on lots and lots of people. And people found that we had people who didn't know each other do it at different tables, 85 people. And what we found is that people could create intimacy almost immediately with complete strangers. And that some of the people that played the game in beta testing, they ended up meeting for lunch and they hang out together and they whatever, and they play the game.
Yeah. But,
so the game can be played by individuals as a journal prompt. Number of people said, I'm going to pull a card today and use that as a journal prompt. But what's also been really, I think, the most touching for me is that I created this with a partner. What's been most touching is the word older people said, there was an older gentleman, he said, I want to play this with my grandchildren because there's no way for me to really talk about my life. I don't know how to enter into conversation with them. And then we've had some younger people play it. And they said, oh, I can't wait to talk about this with my grandparents. You know, when I go to visit them, I don't know what to do. And I want to learn about their lives.
Yeah.
So that was not even thought of. And then there's also a fun thing about the game where, let's say you pull a question card, and you're like, I don't know how to answer it. I'm not sure. You can pull a wisdom card to help you answer your question card. So it's got some elements to it, but it is not ha-ha fun. You know, when people write, I see the reviews, they go, it's really fun. I'm like, if you like depth, you know. But you can also turn down answering a card if you want. I love this. Can I read this one quote? Sorry, now I'm on a roll. This is from
Dr. I think it is fun. I mean, I don't know. You didn't pull all the cards.
I know. I got a shitload of them. This is one of the wisdom cards.
Okay.
This is from Dr. Jet Passar, some Dr. Marlene Alliance. Our common purpose is this, to be none other than ourselves, not the disconnected, distracted, reactive, adaptive, or fabricated selves we have been, but our authentic, spontaneous, genuine, and undefended selves.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's the game.
I like the game. And for me, I was seeing it being played at senior centers, you know?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. That is part of happening. But it's instead of book group, some people are like, instead of a book this month, let's play the game. And, you know, so it's conversational. Husband and wives are playing with it, each other. You know, it's.
You'll be like, I didn't know that. Like, there's going to be things you're like.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Well, Kat Miller, you have to be on our way. I think you kept it real for sure. And my Let's Keep It Real people are definitely going to want to share it, rate it, like it, and subscribe. And we'd really appreciate it. But before we go, is there anything that you'd like to get in that we didn't get in besides we'll tell them where to find you? Any last words of wisdom?
Last words of wisdom are the very things we're afraid of happening as we age actually bring expansions and things in a relationship with ourselves that we've always wanted. And that is bizarre. And it is true. The science shows it. And so the declines, they're scary, they're unwanted, but without them, you don't get the goodies of aging.
So true. So true. I think that's a wonderful note to end on. Now tell us how they can find you. Reach out for all the people. I didn't get to your questions. I'm sure Kat would be happy to answer them.
Well, my TEDx is a great way to get to know me and see who I am and how I am. So people maybe who want to come into therapy or taking a look at that, that's a great way to get a sense of me. But of course, our conversation too. So my TEDx is called Aging Sucks or Does It?
And love the title.
Yeah. And my website is agefreely.com. That's a perfect way. And I have an Instagram at @catagefreely. But, you know, if you get on to and the game, you can once you get on my site, you can find, you know, it all. So, yeah, agefreely.com. That's a great way.
All righty. Thanks, Kat.
Thank you so much. I love, you know, your mission to help people have a better life, to have a better quality of life. And that's a beautiful thing.
You know what I realized? All the questions I pulled, I am going to have to pop. They just popped up. There were men that asked questions too, and I didn't even get to them.
Part two,
baby, because this is for men and women. And it just so happened the questions I was getting, so many of were for the women, but I did have men ask questions.
To see. Oh, that's great. I'm glad. I'm glad to hear that, even though whatever they were, we didn't get to, but it's great that they're asking questions. I have a fair amount of men in my private practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all the same. It's all the same. All right, honey. Have fun. Enjoy
all right.
the show. I know you are.
Yes.
And we'll be in touch.
Okay. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening, watching. Bye.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to share and subscribe if you enjoyed the show. And remember, keep spreading the positive.